Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Safety Matters, the podcast for food safety professionals. I'm Stacey Acheson, publisher of Food Safety Magazine, and I want to thank you for joining us for another special bonus episode. I recently had the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Charles Hoffaker, principal at the Southern Poultry Research Group, and Dr. Bill Potter, food safety technical advisor at Elanco Animal Health, to discuss pre-harvest strategies for controlling salmonella on poultry. As everyone in the poultry world knows, controlling salmonella is one of, if not the, biggest challenges to producing safe to eat poultry. So this is a very important and insightful discussion. But before we begin, let's meet Dr. Hoffaker and Dr. Potter. Dr. Charles Hoffaker is the principal at the private contract research company, the Southern Poultry Research Group, which he started with his wife, Krista, in 2013. Previous to this, he worked in private industry for a number of years before serving as a professor at the University of Georgia in the Department of Population Health and serving as director of clinical services for the Poultry Diagnostic and Research Center. He also served as the executive vice president of the Poultry Veterinary Organization, the American Association of Avian Pathologists. Dr. Hoffaker received his Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, Master's and Bachelor's degrees from The Ohio State University, and a Master in Avian Medicine and PhD in Veterinary Medical Microbiology from the University of Georgia. Bill Potter has spent 3 decades leading food safety initiatives in the poultry industry. Currently, Bill is a food safety technical advisor at Elanco Animal Health, where he helps clients optimize their pre-harvest and plant interventions. Previously, Bill held strategic leadership roles in poultry food safety, quality, and technical services at George's Inc., ConAgra Poultry, and Advanced Food Company. He has chaired the National Chicken Council Technical and Regulatory Committee and has been active in IAFP. Bill obtained an animal science degree and an MBA from Texas A&M University and a master's and PhD in poultry science from the University of Arkansas. All right, now let's get to that discussion. Well, hello, it's really a pleasure to welcome you both to Food Safety Matters. I think a great place for us to start today is to have you explain a multi-hurdle approach to controlling salmonella in poultry production pre-harvest.
Well, I'd like to take that one, Stacy. To me, the multi-hurdle approach doesn't begin in the pre-harvest. It needs to begin at the processing plant so that we understand which salmonella serovars we're having to deal with. And then we can move back onto the pre-harvest side. And I'll give you an example. If we have, say, Salmonella enteritidis or Salmonella typhimurium is our most common salmonella in the processing plant. If we look just at the broilers, we may find Salmonella Kentucky is the most common salmonella. And if we put a multi-hurdle approach to controlling Kentucky, we're going to be addressing those Salmonella serovars that are making it through to the final product. So we need to begin our multi-hurdle approach by going all the way back to the breeders and understanding which Salmonella serovars at this particular complex are making its way all the way to our broiler processing plant.
Excellent. Well, now what ways can companies utilize different pre-harvest strategies that complement each other in live bird production to help control salmonella?
Once we have an understanding of which salmonellas we're dealing with, then we begin to look at those ends that we have available to us. If you were someone who was reading a recent paper that Chuck Hoffaker published, and he said you need to use these two different interventions, if you don't fully understand which serovars you're dealing with, you may select the wrong intervention and it not be effective in reducing the salmonella that's coming to you. The other thing, if you put a direct fed microbial or a competitive exclusion product in at the same time that you're using a live salmonella vaccine, if you don't have the timing just right between that direct fed microbial and the live salmonella vaccine, you you could have a direct fed microbial that's competitively inhibiting your live vaccine. So your multi-hurdle strategy needs to be one that's integrated with the different pieces that you're going to use and fully understand how those pieces work or could interfere with each other.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, with so many poultry companies following a no antibiotics ever or NAE program, are there any special strategies that those farms should consider related to salmonella control?
Let me reframe that question in this way. What I most often get asked is, I'm going to go antibiotic free or no antibiotic ever. Is that going to make my salmonella worse? When we look at it that way, we're saying taking the antibiotics out and I might have necrotic enteritis. Is the necrotic enteritis going to result in greater salmonella colonization and greater risk for my plant? If you look at the research and do a dig into the research that's been done with necrotic enteritis and salmonella, birds that are challenged with both salmonella and then challenged with Clostridium to create necrotic enteritis don't have higher colonization of salmonella. So in the strictest sense of the word, necrotic enteritis doesn't make salmonella worse, to boil it down. But one of the things that we have found, if we move out of the research setting and go to a real broiler farm, what we do see is that if we don't do a good job of maintaining intestinal health in those broilers, we're going to have necrotic enteritis. And then the next thing we'll see is small birds and big birds in that broiler house, a lot of uniformity. In our processing plant, for example, if we're going to kill a 5-pound broiler, that's our target. Well, we're going to set the equipment in that processing plant for that 5-pound broiler. Well, if some of those broilers coming in weigh 3.5 or 4 pounds, then we're going to have more intestines, torn crops. And Scott Russell at the University of Georgia did a really nice piece of work 20 years ago to show that poor uniformity in broilers coming into the processing plant can result in higher salmonella and E. coli isolation on carcass rinses. So indirectly, yes, if I go NAE, I may have higher salmonella, but that's only because I'm not doing a good job of controlling necrotic enteritis. We're just getting necrotic enteritis, which results in uniformity issues.
Thank you. Well, we're going to switch gears here a little bit. Dr. Potter, I wanted to ask you, we keep hearing more about more emphasis on quantitative salmonella measurements in pre-harvest and processing with the latest USDA guidance. Can you explain some new ideas on how this can be incorporated?
Yes, quantitative salmonella is something I'm very passionate about. You know, measuring salmonella can be done in several ways. You can do prevalence rate, you can do quantitative loads or serovars, and these are all effective. They have their value and for different reasons. But the good thing is some of these newer lab technologies are now making it really easier than ever to get some quantitative salmonella and even campylobacter results. And some of these are even AOAC approved now. Quantitation can be done utilizing techniques like qPCR or modified MPN, which is most probable number counts, or even some threshold limit analysis. With these methods, you know, poultry and livestock producers really have a lot of good options now to implement a proactive quantitative monitoring system. So what's the idea of quantitative data? Well, this gives you an idea of the loads pre-harvest, which can be tracked all the way through processing in addition to the presence or prevalence. So here's some examples. You know, you can get environmental samples at the farm. This is like taking a moistened sock and, you know, putting it over your shoe or your boot, walking through the house in a designated pattern, doing a lab analysis of those samples. You can also do sponge swabs at designated areas at the farm or the hatchery. I like one of these easier places to monitor, which is actually when these birds arrive at the plant. You can get cica, or you can get carcasses prior to processing, even with the feathers still intact. You can even measure a little further down after the feathers are removed, but all of these are good ways to get some quantitative data. And then what you can do is the plants can do some extensive biomapping from then on throughout the plant to see how these incoming salmonella loads may be affecting the loads at various points in the process. So, you know, for example, in a poultry plant, this might mean taking samples after the feathers are removed, after evisceration, after washing, after chilling, and maybe even at the end after all the final antimicrobial interventions have been applied to the cut-up portions. In quantitative analysis, I like a blend of indicator organisms like APC or Enterobacteriaceae, in addition to your pathogen quantitative loads like for Salmonella and Campi. And again, don't forget, for other types of analysis, like looking for harmful serotypes, that type of testing is also important from time to time. These serotype analysis still use primarily in a lot of areas traditional serology, but going forward, there's some great serotype analysis methods like next generation sequencing or whole genome, CRISPR, or even some PCRs are now being developed for some limited serotype analysis. So, but anyway, back to the point about quantitative, I believe quantitative salmonella measuring is now the way of the future, and it gives us a lot of good, valuable information.
Okay. So how is the USDA refocusing its efforts to reduce salmonella in poultry? And how do you think this might apply to pre-harvest and processing food safety improvement products? Again, to you, Dr. Potter.
Oh, yeah, sure. Projects and food safety improvement projects have been going on for, forever, really, in poultry plants. But really now there's a renewed emphasis on doing these pre-harvest in addition to what is traditionally done in the plant. When you talk about any kind of a project, the first thing I like to think about is setting some kind of a baseline, seeing where you are, just as if it's a research study. Setting some type of a baseline, some type of a goal, and then trying to make improvement against that. Of course, USDA has their own baselines, if you will, or goals. These are the healthy people goals. And unfortunately, when it comes to salmonella incidence rates, although the industry has reduced salmonella quite a bit, the rates have not really reduced triple-little poultry. So currently, USDA is working with industry on the development of pilot projects. Some producers are looking at various options here, particularly in salmonella, loads, serotypes. Some may be looking at pre-harvest, many probably looking through processing plants. But the idea in my mind is what companies can do is look at a continuous improvement approach. Again, not a pass-fail, but a continuous improvement approach. See where you are. You can even set up some baseline limits. These can be based on things like doing a lot of quantitative data at one of these measurement points, setting an upper 80th percentile, an upper 90th percentile, or just whatever limit that makes sense to demonstrate process control in that particular complex. And then going from there and having trigger farm checks for any farms that are above some threshold limit to go out and do some investigative or improvement work for trying to meet the goals and get below whatever the baseline limits are. And I do think these are best done by complex. One last comment, company-wide or industry-wide baselines may be a little bit difficult to do for everyone, but if you can do them by complex and then each complex working on making reductions of pathogens, to me, that makes the most sense at this current time.
Mm-hmm. And that continuous improvement, right? Or as I heard someone say the other day, relentless dissatisfaction.
Yeah, plant QA and food safety and operations people have been using statistical process control for CI projects for years and years and years. And of course, I have a lot of background in that. And so I can see where this could be very applicable also to pre-harvest strategies.
Right. So now I noticed that Elanco has put together an excellent resource site called Salmonella 360. Can you explain what that is and how does it emphasize a multi-hurdle approach?
Yes, this holistic approach to preventing salmonella at pre-harvest is something at Elanco we commonly refer to as our Salmonella 360 approach. And it really includes, five components that I'll talk about in a little more depth. And just briefly, these five are vaccines, intestinal integrity programs, nutritional health feed ingredients, integrated pest management, and then on-farm best management practices. So just kind of looking at those and breaking each of those down a little bit. On salmonella vaccines, I think it's pretty clear now that the research would tell you that a good, robust vaccination program is the first step to build bird immunity and help prevent salmonella colonization. Vaccines have been very effective in poultry. When salmonella is an issue at the plant, it starts with colonization at the farm. It doesn't start at the plant. So vaccines are strategically used early in the process. They address the root cause of salmonella. Vaccination programs include strategies in breeders and can be included in meat birds. And when they're consistently applied, these are very successful. Now, just quickly, there's a couple of types of vaccines, inactivated and live vaccines. Each of them play a different type of a role, but a very key role in pathogen reduction. So then the next one that I mentioned is intestinal integrity programs. Bird health and food safety go hand in hand. That's why it's important for producers to really think strongly about their programs to promote intestinal integrity. These things reduce coccidiosis and necrotic enteritis, like Chuck was talking about a little earlier. They prevent damage to intestinal strength. And so, as this intestinal wall acts as, a healthy physical barrier to prevent colonization, we think that's very important. And it also helps create uniformity and prevent what Chuck was talking about earlier about processing plant problems. Kind of the third bucket in this 360 would be nutritional health programs. These are feed supplements primarily. The advantage of functional feed ingredients, these advantages have really grown and had a lot of study in recent years. A lot of different modes of action to reduce salmonella. Some of the examples include prebiotics, probiotics, competitive exclusion products. You can have acidifiers, gut oxygen modulators, pathogen agglutination compounds, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the most important functions of these is to provide this intestinal wall physiology strength. And this leads not only to reduce pathogen colonization, but it can also improve nutrient absorption performance. So it can have some economic benefits there. And then this number four in the list here is insecticide rodent control programs. We know that in controlling insects and rodents is one of the most effective ways to manage the well-being and performance of a flock, but it's also a crucial strategy for reducing salmonella proliferation. Darkling beetles, mites, flies, rodents, these all can carry salmonella and other pathogens. And then finally, a comprehensive poultry farm best management practice, it's just a given for controlling salmonella and is an important part of the 360 approach. For example, things like good poultry house water management, litter management, good processes during the clean out process. Some processors effectively use litter amendments or litter windrowing, which is where you can kind of stack the litter in a certain way to be antagonistic against pathogens. All of these things are key and can be used effectively. So when we talk about 360 here, this Salmonella 360 approach, Stacy, that's kind of the five things. All of them work effectively and work complementary fashion to optimize salmonella reduction.
Well, that's great. And the site really is very user-friendly and I think very informative to getting getting that all-around approach there and getting mm-hmm. those resources. So, Dr. Hoffaker, back to you. Do pre-harvest best management practices that help reduce salmonella also help with reducing other foodborne pathogens, or do these all require different pre-harvest controls?
The quick answer is to just say yes. You'll get.
I always love the short answer.
Added benefit from all of them. I'll give you a good example of where I think we can see very good benefits. And for poultry, we're really talking pre-harvest-wise, Campylobacter. So if we do insect control, darkling beetle insect control, as Bill was mentioning, the beetles have been shown to carry salmonella and be a vector for salmonella from one flock to the next. Salmonella will live in the beetle intestines for at least 60 days. So it can carry from one flock to the next. But we also can isolate from those beetles Campylobacter. We can also isolate some of the viruses like infectious bursal disease and reovirus. So controlling beetles will help us not only with potential challenge for Campylobacter, but also for some of these other poultry diseases. And we see the same with rodent control. Another good example would be, and we don't know for sure on this, but I would suspect that some of these acid products that are being used in the withdrawal water that last 48 to 72 hours, drinking water before the birds go to the plant, may also give us a reduction in the campy load that's going to come into our plant. We know they work well for salmonella. There is some preliminary work that I've seen that they may help also for campy. So I think we can't say yes all the time, but I think there are certain strategies that we can do to reduce salmonella that are also going to give us a benefit in reducing campy.
So moving back to USDA for a minute, how can Elanco help companies with responding to USDA efforts, Dr. Potter?
Sure. Poultry companies really need their vendor partners, and they should expect their vendor partners to help them both on the live side and the processing side. And, you want a vendor that strives not only to have a good portfolio of products, but have a really keen understanding of the customer's definition of success, you know, whatever that is, whether it's food safety or animal performance or bird welfare or whatever it is, and then has the goal of delivering not only services, but obviously next generation products to customers that, and doing in such a way that there's good relationship building and solving customers' issues. So that's what we try to do at Elanco, and provide those subject matter experts, such as poultry scientists, veterinarians. We have nutritionists, microbiologists, researchers, field support staff, an entire team of people that can provide services throughout the supply chain there. Projects is a big thing that our company provides. We've typically got multiple projects going on with several customers at one time, and also a lot of times some controlled research studies at the same time. Either in the field or in controlled environments, these projects can be very beneficial and helpful to our customers. So, engaging with customers in all of these ways is probably our primary focus of helping companies respond to the USDA effort.
Yes, knowledgeable partners are just invaluable. So, Chuck and Bill, is there anything else that you'd like to add on this topic?
Yeah, I would. If I could have the listeners just remember one thing from this discussion, it's that the effort to be or working to be successful in this multi-hurdle pre-harvest approach really takes a team. And pre-harvest, to me, begins in the processing plant by understanding what we have in the plant. Then we'll where we can focus our pre-harvest intervention to have maximal effect. And this team needs to include not just the processing plant personnel, but also the live production manager for the broilers and the breeders, the hatchery, the veterinarians and nutritionists. They all should be in a room and they should be talking, and the program needs to evolve from what we find in the plant all the way back to those day old baby breeder chicks. If we're going to be successful, we have to have this team working together and putting together this multi-hurdle approach.
So as we wrap up today, I wanted to ask, where can listeners get some more information about developing a multi-hurdle approach pre-harvest food safety program?
Yeah, I'll take that one. I think it's important to have as many relationships with that you can with as many different entities that are involved in this whole multi-hurdle pre-harvest food safety approach. That might mean your poultry or your science universities, the research firms. Certainly there's a growing list of resources to tap into, such as even the USDA compliance guidelines and all of the published papers in our academic journals that are frequently now part of open access. But certainly utilize your vendors. They should have the most latest up-to-date knowledge about their products and their services, whether that be pre-harvest or in the plant. Certainly utilize your own plant data collection and pre-harvest data collection projects to get more information about what you need to do. Here at Elanco, my email is bill.potter@elancoah.com. I'm happy to connect you or any of the listeners with any of our food safety technical advisors, or certainly our Elanco website's a good place to start. But I do want to also stress here, kind of as we're wrapping up, again, what Dr. Hoffaker said there about the importance of getting all members of your team together. And sometimes that means extending your team into your vendor partners. Don't necessarily say they have to be in the same room at the same time, but certainly they're an important part of your team. In addition to those, as Chuck mentioned, from live production all the way through processing. But that's the way to get enough information to develop a good pre-harvest food safety program, in my opinion.
Well, we've certainly gathered a lot of great information here today, and I want to thank both of you for joining us and for spending time with us today on Food Safety Matters.
Enjoyed the conversation very much, and thank you to our listeners for joining.
Thanks again to Dr. Hoffaker and Dr. Potter for this informative discussion, and Elanco Animal Health for sponsoring this episode. You can find more information about Elanco's pre-harvest poultry solutions on their salmonella360.us website. Also, in the show notes in your podcast player or the episode page on our website at food-safety.com. We hope that you've enjoyed this special episode of Food Safety Matters, and we'll talk to you soon.